morning and welcome to What We Lose in the Shadows,
a father-daughter true crime podcast.
My name is Jameson Keys.
I'm Caroline. Hello and good morning, all you lovely listeners. And good morning to you.
Well, thank you, Caroline. Good morning. I thought you were going to leave me out of that.
Almost. But Then I saw you.
Then I saw you. I looked up and I saw you. A familiar face that I've seen for my entire life.
One that when I look back in pictures at myself as a child, looks like you.
Sorry about that.
Hey, you know, it's never done me wrong.
That's right. You actually look like your grandma, which is, she was a beautiful woman.
So. I know, but sometimes I look back at pictures of me as a child and like your face is very prominent in my face as a child.
And if you want to see both of our faces, go to our Instagram page at What We Lose in the Shadows, or go to jamesonkeys.com. You can see pictures of us all.
Love.
You said you had a lovely drink this morning.
Oh my God. This is where he's going to make fun of me. It was a lavender oat milk latte.
Wow. A lavender oat milk latte.
Oat milk.
Lavender oat milk latte. Let's try that again.
Oat. It's made of oats.
Gotcha.
Not oak.
Oh, shit. Oh, no. So a lavender oat milk latte.
Yes.
Lovely.
That's exactly. It tastes exactly how it sounds.
Tastes kind of pretentious, I bet.
Oh, a little. It was very elegant.
Elegant. Okay.
It gave my morning a little bit of elegance.
It was a coffee, right?
It was a coffee.
Okay.
Two shots of coffee.
Wow.
With lavender powder. It was literally an ethereal experience.
Ethereal, it was it. Wow. Mm-hmm.
I recommend going to
this
try
was still
one.
A drink, right? I mean, ethereal.
It tasted elegant. Amazing. I've never tasted anything like it. So
I'm half tempted to try it.
That's not a pug. Yeah, you should go try it. We'll try one together, and okay. Then you can come back and tell them how you liked it. I'd give it a 9 out of 10.
So it's funny because I didn't used to drink coffee at all, and then.
You had a child.
Well, no. And when we moved to Japan when you were 3 months old, and I took a teaching position over there for a year, and I didn't drink coffee at that point. But when you went to different things, people's houses, different things for the school or whatever, they always offered drinks, and they were always it was either coffee or green tea. And I know, before I say this, I know the benefits, you know, extolled upon green tea, and it's wonderful and so on. But it tastes like grass to me, so I don't like it.
It does not.
It does. But at the same time, so that's when I started drinking coffee. And I started with you ever since. Well, it really has. I mean, I used to drink over there the worst coffee ever. It was those instant crystals that you just pour hot water over, and it's just terrible coffee. Now, I've come up
with it. I like it because it's strong, though. I do like the instant coffee.
Well, keep in mind, at that point in time, and this is 1997, 1998.
Damn, that's old.
Wow. But you were a baby already.
Ugh.
So, I mean, I'd have to jump on my bicycle and, you know, pedal for half an hour to one of the schools that I was teaching at. So I needed to be awake so you don't run in front of a bus or something like that.
Oh my God,
like that.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Didn't the wind wake you up a little?
Oh, so, boy, are we getting off topic here. Yes, absolutely. But in the middle of wintertime, and I assume Japan, I don't know, I thought maybe we had some kind of a tropical kind of a thing. And in the summertime, it certainly was, right? But I didn't realize they had quite the change of seasons that they do.
You didn't research before you moved there?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I don't know. It's really strange because... when we went home for Christmas, all of us for a month, while I was teaching over there. And when I came back a couple of days earlier than you guys, cause I had to, you know, start school again, and there was 6 inches of snow on the ground. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm on a bicycle.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So
you couldn't take the bus.
Yeah, you could. I mean, you could take a cab or the bus, but my bike was at the train station. So I rode my bike back in the midst of this, you know, 6 inches of snow, which was dicey. No, not ethereal at all. Terrifying, in fact.
So the opposite of a lavender oat milk latte.
Polar opposite. Yes.
Literally polar.
Literally polar.
Well, I would like to say that apparently green tea is nature's Ozempic.
Nature's Ozempic?
Yeah. It's like it slims you down, green tea.
Wow.
So there you go.
A lot of things are nature's Ozempic, apparently. I'm starting to take something called berberine, and they call it nature's Ozempic.
I can't believe two things are marketing themselves as that. Sure. Okay, let's get into it. Trigger warnings today are sexual assault and murder.
Caroline, we are going to be talking about a case.
Good.
That is, it's from a while back. I'm not going to lie, and I knew nothing about this case, and I was alive during this period of time.
It's from a while back, but you were alive.
It's from years ago. It's from the '70s, right?
How old were you? 20?
Funny. When this happened in 1974, I was 11.
So basically
20. Yeah. It's basically 20 in your rationale that is, cause you know, you were trying to drive a car from the time you're 11. Dad, I'm almost 16. No, you're 11. You're not even close to 16. Well, I'm a preteen. You're not a pre. Yeah, anyways, we've had this argument, Caroline and I, for a very long time. So anyways, so on July 26th, 1974, a girl was out on the beach with her family. And this was in Provincetown, Massachusetts, you know, also on Cape Cod. Mm-hmm. And they were running around in the dunes out there. And she heard this dog barking, right? And it just got her attention. So she started walking and following the barking dog. And when she found the dog, what she found was kind of awful. She found a decomposing body.
What the fuck?
And it was sitting there on the beach. It was closer to like the road, but not that far from the beach, right? Mm-hmm. And this reminds me kind of the Gilgo Beach, the whole Gilgo Beach thing, right? So she screamed, of course, and her parents came running and they called the police and so on.
Was the dog barking at the body?
At the body, right? Wow. Right. So that's what
was it? Her dog?
You know, I've seen both things in the source material. One thing said it was their dog. One other piece of source material said it was just a random dog.
Okay.
But the one thing that was common, regardless, was the fact that they found this body. Now, around the body, the victim was laying on a beach blanket, and she was laying there with her head propped up on a folded pair of Wrangler jeans and a blue bandana. She was naked.
My God.
Yeah. And, you know, little things about the victim. She had long auburn hair. She had pink painted toenails. She was approximately 5'6" tall, 145 pounds, kind of an athletic build. But she also was completely naked. So obviously there was probably sexual assault done there. Mm-hmm. She didn't have a lot of bruising or anything like that. So it kind of people were thinking that maybe she knew who her attacker was. But some odd things, too. Whoever had attacked her hit her in the head with what they think was an army entrenching tool, which is like a little sturdy shovel that the army uses to dig trenches and so on.
Wow.
Side of her head was caved in, and she was nearly decapitated.
Wow. That's horrible.
It is. And even worse, both of her hands and part of one of her arms was missing.
To try and like decrease them being able to find out who she was, probably.
They think so. They think so. And one last thing is some of her teeth were pulled out as well.
Yeah. So that kind of tracks with that.
Right. But she also had, she also had extensive, dental work. So they looked around and, you know, Provincetown is kind of a small place. It's on, it's on the Cape there. And they're not used to this sort of thing happening, right? So the police were called and they went around and it's kind of a cool little town, beach town and that sort of thing.
This doesn't really happen.
Yeah,
often.
And they're close-knit, yeah. And no one knew this woman. They gave a description of her and so on. No one was missing.
Oh.
The police checked all the missing persons, bolos and things like that. Nothing.
How far is P-Town? Is it P-Town, right? That's what they call
Providence
P-Town?
Town? I don't know.
Well, I guess I'm cooler than you.
You are.
How far is Provincetown from Boston?
It's not very far from Boston at all. I mean, it's...
Okay, so it could just be from that.
It could be, but I mean, you need to take a plane there or a boat there. It's not... So, yeah, it's on the Cape there. And so, you know, it's you know, not exactly real close to Boston or anything like that. But so, yeah, they started this long investigation. You know, they looked for all missing people, nothing, you know. It's obvious that the person was trying to hide this person's identity and, you know, taking the hands and taking the teeth and things like that. So yeah, it was a very, very odd situation, but it went on for quite some time because there was just no development on it. Right? Mm-hmm.
They couldn't figure out who it was.
They couldn't figure out who it was. So they dubbed this person the Lady of the Dune. And it went on and on for a long, long time, right? So some of the odder parts of the story, there have been many, many different thoughts about what happened during this period of time. So the theories, and probably one of the oddest theories, in August of 2015, speculation arose that the Lady in the Dunes may have been an extra on the 1975 film Jaws. Now, how this came about was...
So she's never been...
Right.
They've never identified her to this day.
So we'll get into that later.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you know, the funny thing was they had exhumed her body several times to take blood samples, hair samples. They did a partial reconstruction, giving her skull, and they did this several times. Her body was exhumed three times as technology and so on, you know, came back up and so on, just to try to get an idea, but never any kind of a... Every time that they had a lead or something like that, it would go dead, and then it wasn't her, right?
Wow.
So yeah, this young man, this Joe Hill. Joe Hill is actually the son of horror writer Stephen King.
Wow.
And he was watching, I think, the 45th anniversary of Jaws, because one of the things that came out of these exhumations was kind of a composite sketch, given the, you know, the fact that they did a facial reconstruction and computer enhancements and things like that. And one of the most popular ones showed this woman with auburn hair. The woman in this real quick little scene within Jaws, the lady did have auburn hair. And she had on Wrangler jeans, and she had on a blue bandana very similar to the one that they found at the murder site.
Was it recorded in Boston?
So it was recorded on Cape Cod, far from there. It
That's
was recorded
so
in 1974 during that period of time. So naturally, you know, in 2015, people were like going, oh my God, you know, we just have to figure out who this, you know, who some of the extras were on that, on Jaws. And maybe we can find out who this woman is after all these years.
And that was Stephen King's son.
Stephen King's son came up with this because he's watching it. He's familiar with the case. He loves true crime. So maybe he'll listen to us. Who knows? But basically, yeah, he came up with this and he thought, my God, that's her.
Wow.
He gave the information to the police and they kind of ran with this. But unfortunately,
it wasn't.
It could have been, because they went back and they went to the first person who was in charge of personnel on that movie in 1974 had passed away. So they went back and they tried to find whatever they could. But the thing was, they were trying to use some extras, but some of the people were just there.
Oh, fuck.
Boarding a boat and so on and so on. And they could not identify who this woman was.
So it really could have been her.
It could very well have been her. Because there's a lot of different theories. Like, there was one crazy theory that there was a name of James Whitey Bulger. He was in part of the Irish mob in Boston. And he was known to kill people. He was also known to cut their hands off and things like that. Couldn't identify them and tie them to him.
But why would she be connected to him?
Because he used to like to go to that part of the Cape.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And a woman had said that basically she had seen Whitey Bulger in the Cape during that period of time.
Ooh.
Now, there couldn't be any substantiation of that because... by the time they came up with this theory and so on, Whitey had been arrested and he was killed in jail.
Wow. Okay.
By another inmate. But another problem with that theory was the fact that the woman that said, yes, it was, you know, I knew Whitey and I saw Whitey at a bar not too far from there during that period of time. Then she kind of doubled down and said, I even saw that body out on the beach, but I didn't, report it to anyone. So some people were going, did you really?
Because, well, that would be a crime.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And why would you admit to that? I don't know. That's strange. Anyways.
It was strange, but it's a very strange case, right?
Yeah.
In addition, there is a serial killer by the name of Hayden Clark, and he confessed to murder, that he could have murdered that woman. He said in a letter to a friend that he had, during that period of time, found a woman walking along the beach alone, and that he had murdered her, and he had cut off her hands and pulled out her teeth.
Probably her then.
He also said that he had used her fingers for bait and fishing. And then he buried the hands somewhere on the beach.
What a piece of shit. What the fuck?
Now, the problem with him is that all those little bits of information had been made public.
Yeah, but it's so, still... Okay, so you're thinking...
So it could have been. And he's also confessed to... Like, he killed 3 or 4 people. That's why he's in jail. He's a serial killer. Mm-hmm. But... He also confessed to several other things
that he
led police
have.
On a wild goose chase, okay. and it turned out to be nothing.
Okay.
And so this case went along over the years, over the decades, actually. But on October 31st, 2022, the FBI field office in Boston announced that the victim had been identified as Ruth Marie Terry. No details of any potential suspects were known at that time. Terry was in Massachusetts at the time of her murder. The FBI stated that Terry's identity was determined using the investigative genealogy and the DNA, the same method they used to identify homicides in over 150 cases across the country, including the Golden State Killer.
It's insane.
So, and so they knew who it was for a few years. But then they started looking deeper and they realized that on November 2nd, 2022, they kind of started thinking that Terry's deceased husband, Guy Rockwell Moldavin, could have very well been the person they were looking for all this time.
So actually, like statistically, that would make sense. Because
it would, and it why that didn't dawn on them earlier, like instantaneously, was she married?
Well, they couldn't figure out who it was, right?
Well, yeah, right. But it took them just a few months to figure that, connect this, the rest of this.
Oh, okay.
So, this guy, Rockwell, dude had been married, he was married to, Manzanita Eileen Ryan. And he was married to her, and she had a daughter by a previous husband, and her name was Dolores Ann Means, and she was 18. Both women, while he was married to Rockwell, disappeared in Seattle on April Fool's Day, 1960, with Mulvain becoming the primary suspect in the investigation.
Of course.
He fled Seattle.
What?
But was arrested by the FBI later and charged with unlawful flight and trying to avoid testimony in the deaths. Now, they never found the bodies.
Oh, my God.
But they found DNA, remnants of them in the septic system of the house. So this guy's a monster.
So was he like flushing them down the drain?
Maybe he broke them down some way and just, flushed them into the...
That's unhinged.
Oh, it's unhinged to be sure.
What the hell?
So there's a true crime author by the name of Anne Rule, and she devoted a section of her 2007 book, Smoke, Mirrors, and Murders, to Mulvain in connection with the Ryan Means disappearances, with an extensive discussion on police efforts to connect Mulvain to the crime. The investigation found some parts of dismembered human body in the septic tank, but were unable to prove that the missing women were actually the people they were looking for.
Why?
They didn't have the capability of tying the DNA to it at that point. They couldn't differentiate.
But they knew it was them.
They're pretty sure it was him, right?
No, but they knew like that matter was
now
them.
Now they knew. They were able to go back and say, yes, this is, But Mulvain was also the prime suspect in the murder of Henry Lawrence Red Baird, a 28-year-old truck driver, and the disappearance of Barbara Jo Kelly, a 17-year-old waitress in June of 1950.
Oh, my God.
You know, Barbara was last seen in Humboldt County, California on June 17th, 1950, when she embarked on a date with Baird, who was her boyfriend. Baird's body was discovered face down on a beach.
That's terrifying.
Near a table in a bluff in the following morning. He had received a gunshot wound to the back of his head, and the lady was, of course, dead as well.
What the heck? So they just went on a date and he murdered them without cause?
He found them on a beach and just randomly murdered them.
That's horrifying.
Right. So after that, Mulvane moved to California, a small community near Salinas. And around 1976, according to, you know, a feature that was written about him, he had retired from his job. He had been a person that finds antiquities and things like that. He had a shop on Rodeo Boulevard. In his profile, he also had done some, work on the radio at KAZU in Pacific Grove. And he volunteered to do a 3-hour call-in show, on aging and growing old.
Ugh.
It was that. Then he married Ruth Marie Terry. So he met Ruth and they had gone all over the country, basically buying and looking at antiques. They had visited Tennessee to meet her family and so on. And after they left there, they said they were driving to Boston to look for antiques and so on.
Okay, so it was him.
Oh, most certainly was him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But and then shortly thereafter, that he called her parents back and said that she had disappeared.
What the hell? Yeah. And wait, but they didn't connect that with the body that they found up there?
Yeah, eventually, they did.
Yeah, but like for 45 years.
Right, right. Well,
like her parents were like, oh, okay. I guess it's just like the technology was like really severely lacking.
Yeah, it was and the
like
60s and 70s.
News wasn't a thing.
Right, and there was no internet.
I mean,
there was no
news,
true crime shows. There was nothing like that, and there was no DNA to tie all these things
That's
together.
Crazy.
This guy had been killing people for years.
That's insane.
And the interesting part, like he would be dating someone, mm-hmm. right? And then he would meet someone else that had money or something like that. And then he would kill off that wife and then move on to someone else. He was a psychopath. And if you want to see something disturbing, he wrote a book called Cooking with Rump Oil.
What is that?
It's a cookbook. And
what is oil? Rump oil?
I don't know. I didn't look into it very much, but it sounds so. And one of the... He like wrote poems about these different things. And this one, he really liked watching the light go out of someone's eyes, right?
He wrote this in his book?
He wrote kind of a poem about this in this cookbook, right? Which was bizarre. And he even had an illustration of a woman with long hair kind of looking back at him and, kind of her eyes kind of doll-like and so on.
And they published this?
Someone published it. But yeah, so this was a very, very disturbed individual.
Red flag.
Red flag.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So, but this guy got off scot-free from all of these murders for so long. He did die in 2002 in prison. They finally put him in prison for something else. The funny thing was, he was actually one of his wives. He had extorted money from the parents. He had, basically said, oh, we're going to invest in this. And then just took off with the money. And that's actually how they caught him and put him in jail because that was pretty, that was a little less, he didn't think he was in peril as much with this one. Mm-hmm. So they caught him for extorting these people and, kind of stealing their money.
Wow.
But yeah, this was one sick individual.
That's horrible.
So, but the nice thing is, they did find the killer after all those years, and this guy was in jail, for certain things, but he never paid for some of the terrible, terrible things he did. And we'll never know exactly because he's dead. They really can't try the man after
right.
he's dead.
Yeah. So, no, they can't. They won't.
So yeah. So that was a very, very strange case. And we still don't know. We still don't know because they asked the family, does this look a little bit like this woman in the Jaws film? And they were like, kind of does. So she could have been in the movie Jaws.
Was he, I wonder, was he in the background as well?
They didn't see him. There was nothing in the source material to say that they actually have a picture of him walking around. But they think it could very well that she could have been in that.
That's so
eerie.
And it
was literally hours before her death.
Wow. That's so crazy. Because she was in the same outfit.
She was in the same outfit. They found basically the same outfit, you know, folded neatly on top of a beach blanket.
That's crazy.
With her head resting on it. So that, at least, the story of the Lady of the Dunes has been solved.
Wow.
Follow the show on whatever streaming site you're listening on.
And remember, all of the source material will be available in the show notes.
And follow us on Instagram at What We Lose in the Shadows. And let us know if you want to hear a specific case.
Or if you just want to give us some feedback.
Okay, join us in the shadows next Tuesday. Bye.